We're offering observations here on the current issues with agricultural trade and trade agreements. Agricultural economist Vincent Amanor Boadu of K-State is Mike's side with us once again. And in the first part of our conversation here, Vincent, we talked mostly about the Trans-Pacific Partnership and the apparent withdrawing of the United States from that process. There's a long-standing trade agreement that's drawing attention as well. It's been around some 25 years or more. The North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA, between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. Now there are comments, let's put it that way, that NAFTA might be ripe for renegotiation. Now, let's reflect on the importance of NAFTA, first of all, and just what it's meant to agriculture over that quarter century.
Well, we looked at this a few years ago when we celebrated the 20th anniversary of NAFTA, and U.S. agriculture has benefited from NAFTA. We have been able to move product a lot easier without, you know, some of the tariffs that were in place between Canada and the U.S. and U.S. and Mexico. We've been able to ship products easily across those borders. We've been able to get access to, especially on our fresh produce side, to the southern side of, you know, in Mexico on that side. So NAFTA has been good for us. And, you know, not everybody accepts it. But, you know, as I told one Canadian farmer, that what NAFTA has done basically is allowed us to recombine our resources in the most effective way and be more competitive in areas where we were generally more competitive but had not seen it. And therefore, we're not taking full advantage of those areas. And we've done well under NAFTA as far as agriculture is concerned.
Yet, and of course, the new administration is looking at the totality of NAFTA over all trade types. But there is the discussion that there's apparent dissatisfaction with NAFTA and that maybe it would be reexamined and reopened for negotiation and amendments, if you will. That whole prospect, what is the likelihood of that, Vincent?
Well, you know, any member country can, you know, initiate a change in the agreement. The challenge with initiating any change in an agreement as large and comprehensive as NAFTA is that you are opening it up for all the members to bring their own dissatisfaction to the fore. So, I mean, as with all trade agreements, you don't get everything you want, but then you compromise and then the agreement is signed on things that, you know, have lost people their political positions because they signed those agreements. So if you open it up, then what is happening is that everything that every member didn't like is now going to be brought up for discussion. Mm-hmm. The practical aspect of doing that we need to consider while we are talking about it is, do you suspend the current agreement while you are renegotiating it, or do you maintain the operations under the current agreement and then finish the renegotiation and then let the new agreement replace the current agreement? Well, let's look at some practical perspective of that. If the issues you are raising are in my favor, and therefore you want to change them, then what interest does Mexico or Canada has in coming to the table if the current agreement is in place, right? So it's going to be a very long, dragged-out negotiation that might never see the light of day because the partners will see it as, if it's benefiting me, why do I want to change it? And by the way, I'm still operating under the current agreement. If you suspend the current agreement, then you throw into chaos a lot of the investments that have happened over the last 25 years. And we've seen signals of that from Europe, where people, because of the free trade agreement, have been able to make investments in partner countries with the understanding that they can move product easily across borders. So if you suspend it, then how do you move U.S. investments that are producing agricultural products in northern Mexico back into the U.S., and what are the tariff arrangements that we are going to put on those? And is the product now a Mexico product or is it a U.S. product? And so you create a whole complex problem for the whole customs environment. Mm-hmm. Are we going to be able to ship alfalfa from Kansas to dairy farms in Mexico? because investments have been made here in Kansas that are taking advantage of the growth of dairy in northern Mexico as a result of this trade agreement. And so where do those, you know, alfalfa output go? Are we going to now ship them instead of going south? Are we going to go over the Rocky Mountains to try and get them to California? It's going to create significant disruption in investments that have been made on the certainty of this trade agreement being in place. And agriculture is probably a small component of this thing, because automobile, airplanes, you know, we are building airplanes here in Kansas, parts of which have been built in Mexico because it makes sense for Boeing or Cessna or any of these companies that are resident here in Kansas to do that under the trade agreement. Now, if you suspend it, how are you going to do that? How are they going to now bring parts in? And what will be the duty on those parts? And all of a sudden, are those investments sensible? So what are some of the implications of that then for us? And my thinking is that you are probably going to see the Canada and the Mexico agreement will remain in place.
They'll keep doing business as usual.
So then the companies are now going to look at it and say, do I have an advantage moving my production out of the U.S. and put it in Canada? Because what you will have is Canada-U.S. has already a trade agreement in place. We have a Canada-U.S. trade agreement. And so when you close the NAFTA and you don't suspend the Canada-U.S. trade agreement, what is stopping U.S. companies that are benefiting from the Mexico part of the NAFTA moving into Canada and then taking full advantage of the Mexico relationship? So, you know, the complexity of these decisions become real when you now start to implement them. It's a lot easier to say that you are going to renegotiate, but the terms and then the potential repercussions, because all these countries are independent countries and they are going to do things that are in their best interest, and companies are going to act that way. And so those are some of the things that I think, Eric, we have to think about as we think about, you know, these renegotiations.
And as a trade scholar who studies these matters meticulously, view all of this, the whole atmosphere concerning the positions on trade on the part of the U.S. and engaging in these agreements, when we see these potential disruptions, if you will, in that agreement process, how does that make you feel, Vincent, about the economic well-being of U.S. agriculture going forward?
I think, and this is how I look at things, I strongly believe that the economic interest of individuals will trump their political interest.
Pun intended.
Okay. Primarily because once the potential risks of economic loss become real, people are going to look at the table and say, wait a minute, this is not in our interest. So, you know, despite all the rhetoric, I am very confident that given the history of the benefits we've got under international trade, especially the NAFTA, which is already in place, and we know the benefits, we know the cost, we know that we are net gains, I am confident that, you know, you're going to get sensibility prevailing. Because it won't be very difficult for companies to come out and say, if you go ahead with this, these are the things we are going to do. And we've seen historically companies influencing policy by basically threatening a response. So I don't worry too much that these are going to happen, because the reality of the difficulty of doing it and the potential loss to organizations and companies in the United States will probably bring some sensibility to bear on these issues. Most of the time, the argument is for labor. You know, we're going to bring workers back. The truth is, and it's very difficult to say this, a lot of the work that has moved is not coming back. And, you know, it's very different for us in agriculture. And that's why I don't think this really is a big issue for us in agriculture. So I think economics is going to probably bring some sensibility to this conversation in a very short while.
we will see where all of this heads, and it won't be suddenly overnight. It'll be told over quite a few months, if not years' time, it would appear. But your perspective is always appreciated, Vincent. Thanks for the insight.
Thank you very much, Eric.
And reflecting there on some of the potential moves with respect to international trade agreements on the part of the United States, and more directly here focusing on the Trans-Pacific Partnership's fate as well as that of the North American Free Trade Agreement, Vincent Amanor-Boadu is an agricultural economist at Kansas State University.